I don't want to get in trouble for starting too early, but hey, we have only a minute. We'll deal with the folks we have in the room. So I have a couple requests for everyone. Number one, as someone who actually sits in the audience too, I have questions that pop in my head. I like to ask them at the moment, usually because they're in context. I'm more than happy to do that. I don't want to do a massive dialogue of 10 questions, but what I prefer is that you jump up, hit the mic, ask me a question, let's get it out of the way, and then we're done. I'm not really big into plowing through all my material and saying, hold your questions till the end, and they have no context, and you forgot the first five anyway. So just get them out. That's the way I prefer it. It just seems to work better. So welcome to the last session in the last time slot on the last day for Tech Ed, How IPv6 Impacts Private Cloud Deployments. I'm Ed Horley. I'm a current Microsoft MVP, not that that should matter too much to you. I'm the author of Practical IPv6 for Windows Administrators. I'm the co-chair for the California IPv6 Task Force, and I happen to be the practice manager for cloud solutions at Groupware Technologies, if that interests anyone. So I would like to open up with, why do we care about IPv6 and the impacts on cloud? Is everyone aware of this? In North America, we ran out of IPv4 as of April 23rd, 2014. How many folks actually knew this, heard about this? So this is a real world event. It actually happened. Aaron went into what's called phase four. We don't have a lot of address block left. So there's a relatively important individual quoted as saying that Microsoft is now all about mobile and cloud. And my good friend Tom, who's actually the chief IPv6 evangelist at Infoblox, basically has an argument that you can't build elastic large-scale cloud without IPv6. There's not any way to scale it out. This is true for mobile, too, in the mobile marketplace. And so therefore, my argument is, if you're not moving to IPv6, you're killing the internet. Who has a plan to move to IPv6? The rest of you are all killing the internet. Congratulations. So I wanted to give you an idea about how bad it is. This is the remaining IPv4 inventory from Aaron. This screenshot was taken a few days ago. What most companies get are the /20 down to the /24 range. I'll be inclusive of those. Out of that range, there are 3,566 blocks of /24 left. That's it. How many folks operate /24s on the front side of their network? How many have bigger blocks than that? /22s, /20s. Yeah, it's over. You need to have a plan put in place, so hopefully you're doing that now. So the problem is, you're probably adopting some sort of cloud solution, and can it support IPv6? That's part of the challenge that we're dealing with. Can our cloud platform actually support this net new protocol that we really need to adopt? So let's cover our overview. We're going to ask the question, what should I be concerned about, right, in supporting IPv6 in private cloud? We're going to talk about private cloud, and I will address some public cloud stuff, but really in the context of private cloud. What's going on? How's it important? Overview. I'm going to cover Hyper-V network virtualization, going to cover MVGRE, the gateway, and some VPN. PowerShell, DHCP, and IPAM. I will caveat this. I give you guys this stuff in the deck. If you download it, all the PowerShell's in there. I hide it all in the slide so we don't have to sit there and read PowerShell. Best practices for IPv6. Quick agenda. We're going to cover sort of Microsoft Private Cloud if you're not aware of it. I don't know why you wouldn't be at the show. A sort of quick primer on IPv6. The big picture goals we have in mind, some impacts, some capabilities, best practices, and a quick wrap-up. So, quick overview on the Microsoft side for Microsoft Private Cloud Solutions. Their overall cloud solution category really sort of fits as customer, service provider, and Microsoft, right? Microsoft being Azure, sort of that public off-premise cloud solution. Off-premise but hybrid is really that service provider model. And on-premises and private is really Microsoft's private cloud solution offering. These you have available to you System Center and Windows Azure Pack today. So that fits for both the on-premise and the off-premise model for hybrid and for private. And then obviously, off-premise, Microsoft Azure is just Azure itself. So private clouds. What we're really doing in private clouds is taking our dedicated resources and allowing us to sort of carve them up, build logical abstractions, then cloud abstractions on top of that, and then actually assign out these capacities to individuals that fit either within our organization or to our customers, depending on who they are, and then putting in standardized services on top of them. Pretty straightforward. Azure connectivity. Most of us are trying to do some sort of hybrid integration, and I know this is something that most people are working on. The reality is that your on-premise to Azure through a VPN gateway is absolutely doable today. This is something that you can do, okay? The real question is, can you do it with IPv6? How many folks know whether Azure actually runs IPv6 or not? Does anyone actually know? Shout it out.
No.
Don't be shy. No, it doesn't. So this looks a little funky. So there's going to be some interesting ways that we're going to deal with this and how we're going to sort of address this particular problem. So private cloud story, it really still is an infrastructure service focused story. So where I'm going to be talking IaaS mainly, not platform, not SaaS. Let's talk about V6 really quickly as a primer. How many folks are actually familiar with this addressing space that just sort of flashed up? You can identify global unicast versus link local, hopefully. Which one's link local? Yeah, the FE80. FE80 is your link local. So let's talk quickly about V6 just so you have a little bit of play in there. 2 to the 32nd is what we use for V4 space. It's about a little shy of 4.3 billion addresses, right? IPv6, 2 to the 128th, it's just a crazy number of addresses. 340 undecillion addresses. It's not a number that you really can conceive of. It's actually hard to wrap your head around. The biggest thing, and the most important thing you need to know, is IPv6 is on by default, and it's actually preferred in the Windows OS, and it has been for quite a long time. And for most people, what they don't realize is if you're deploying Windows Server 2012, 2012 R2, or Windows 8, you've already deployed IPv6, you likely just didn't know it, because it's on by default, right? It's probably not impacting you, but it's on by default. So let's talk really quickly about how Windows networking, what changed in the stack. So prior, on the networking stack, on your left is the older version of the networking stack. And really what's changed is that location of that transport layer. It's a shared network stack. So you can't really remove or turn off IPv6. So to address the gentleman over there who says in the registry you turn off IPv6, you really don't. Actually, when you go through all the changes and you go through the registry and you hack all that stuff, you can still ping ::1 from the host. So the reality is it still needs to be there. The reason why is it's instrumental in that network protocol stack. You can't actually take it out. So quick thing from screenshots, just to give you guys an idea about what an address looks like. The colons actually divide out what we have as 16-bit boundaries. We obviously, it's represented in hex. 4 bits is called a nibble. 16 bits is called a hexadetet or hextet. I just call it a quibble. It's a quad nibble, right? So the other thing that's important is realize is that for link local, we also have something called a zone ID or a scope ID. This is going to be sort of important later when we're dealing with some DHCP-related stuff. So addressing options in Windows. Quickly, Slack. Slack is a way of actually provisioning addresses without having to have a DHCP service involved. It allows my machine to auto-assign an address. We also have something called temporary addresses. We got stateful auto configuration, which is DHCP. It's very similar to DHCP V4 that we're used to today. We have privacy, which is basically a randomly generated address. And then we have some option things we can do. We can manually or statically assign addresses. We can turn on or off what's called EUI64. We can turn off temporary addresses. And we can do some sort of weird combination of all of the above because we have so many options. So wanted to give you some sample IPv6 PowerShell. There's actually about 10 or 11 more slides of this in the deck, but this gives you an idea about what's available within PowerShell itself. There's no difference. The getNetIP interface command set that you're going to use is no different. SetNetIP interface, you're just going to be using V6 addresses instead of V4. Most important thing that most people don't realize is there's actually something called a prefix policy table. Who actually is aware of the prefix policy table understands what it does. Okay, so we'll cover this. Prefix policy table controls behavior of both IPv4 and IPv6. You're running two protocols. You needed some way to determine which one to use. So prefix policy table does exactly that. It tells us how, which protocol to use first and how to use it. And Windows 7, with the IPv6 readiness update and greater, is based on, will utilize a new standard in the RFC called 6724. Otherwise, we're going to use the old one, which is 3484. You need to understand that because the prefix policy table commands are actually what dictates how things route. So that's a regular update. So if you're patching Windows 7 on a regular basis, you're getting this automatically. So you're going to be 6724 if you have that update, but the knowledge base article is in there for you. You can use one PowerShell commandlet to figure this out, get net prefix policy. Unfortunately, you can't modify the table except for with netsh commands. I've complained and bitched about this. They haven't changed it. You still get to use netsh. You're going to have to do some capture stuff in PowerShell in order to change this. Prefix policy table management, here's the actual commands. This is the command sets you're going to need in order to shift your 3484. You got older Windows 7 devices, maybe Windows Vista still hanging around. You're going to need Server 2008 R2, for instance. You're going to need to transform them to use the newer RFC. These are the netsh commands you would use to actually switch an RFC 3484 to an RFC 6724 so that you get the correct routing behavior that you want out of your host. This is actually a pretty important thing to do. Operationally, this is something you're going to want to implement across the board. Okay? DHCPv6, that's the RFC. Really, there's two ways to operate DHCPv6. There's stateful and stateless. Stateful pretty much looks identical to DHCP that you're used to. Stateless, we do something sneaky. We use slack, which means you auto-assign yourself an address. And then we are able to do something sort of tricky. We say, go ahead and go to the DHCP server and get some other information. Usually that other information is things like DNS, maybe some option codes for things like TFTP or NTP or something of that nature. And so we're being a little sneaky. We're saying, go ahead and set yourself up. But for all that other stuff that you might need, go ahead and hit the DHCP server. Does that make sense? These are the typical flag combinations. So slack for that stateful address auto configuration, you're going to have your A flag set, DHCPv6 stateful. Okay? So these are sort of the combinations. These are flags that actually exist within the RA, so router advertisement that happens on the network. Okay? RA is the way that we advertise where a default gateway exists in IPv6. In IPv4, you're used to typically setting up the required information in either DHCP or when you manually assign an address, you put a default gateway in there. You don't have to do that in v6. You actually set up and build out all the information in the RA advertisement that comes from the router. The router provides all this information. Sort of convenient, right? But it's a different methodology than what we do with v4. So, some technical resources, because I don't want to dig too deep in v6, because the rest of the talk is really about private cloud. There's my book, if you want to pick that up. Joe Davies, who actually presented yesterday, wonderful book. I was a technical reviewer for that book also, so recommend both. If you're looking for deployment resources, these are the ones I would recommend to go ahead and read. So let's talk about private cloud networking. Sort of jump into the meat and potatoes. So private cloud networking components. You guys probably are aware of System Center, Virtual Machine Manager. We're going to need in order to be able to do this. Hyper-V network virtualization. MVGRE gateway and a VPN gateway, potentially, depending on what we're trying to achieve. Optionally, you can do the Windows Azure Pack. And then we're going to talk quickly about some PowerShell DHCP, V6, and IPAM. So, Hyper-V network virtualization, really what is it? It's really Microsoft's implementation of SDN, software-defined networking, okay? So, it allows us to distribute, provide an isolated, multi-tenant, scalable performance environment inside of Virtual Machine Manager to orchestrate all of that and lay it down on top of Hyper-V. So, we can do all sorts of wonderful elastic virtual network components. So, it's really all about reducing complexity and keeping it simple, so it's all about KISS. And I would really recommend you use System Center Virtual Machine Manager to lay down, orchestrate, and run it. It is too difficult to do in PowerShell yourself. You can do it. You will shoot yourself. There's no reason to. That's what they put Virtual Machine Manager in there for you. So quickly, let's just cover quickly what we see here. In a Microsoft private cloud, with System Center Virtual Machine Manager, you can do IPv6. It's actually listed there. You can see I built an IPv6 net. It actually has this is actually from the address range that's reserved for documentation, but I set it up. And as we walk through all the screenshots, you're going to see we can actually build out a VM subnet that actually includes V6, and it actually dynamically built all this. So, and Nick should recognize this because this is actually the stuff that runs in our lab. But System Center Virtual Machine Manager has a new component that you can operate underneath it called the MVGRE Gateway. So the MVGRE gateway is a construct to allow us to build effectively a tunnel overlay network. So we're building an overlay network across our existing network. So we're building a customer network on top of our provider network, right? And we want those customer networks that are isolated on top of our provider network with all these special tunnels that are built to be able to get outbound to the real world. That's where this MVGRE gateway fits in. It services the function to get out of that logical network that we built on top of the physical and get it back into the physical or another logical network. So it's sort of the glue that allows us to sort of route in and out. It can also act as a VPN gateway, but we won't talk about that as of yet. So it can either do this by routing, as pure routing, so you don't have address space conflicts because you're using unique address space in your customer address space, or you can reuse IP address space, so you can use RFC 1918 space and have one customer on 10.0, another customer on 10.0, they don't collide, they go into their own container within this MVGRE gateway, get NATed to something else, and go outbound. Does that hopefully make sense for everyone? So the gateway roles provided a software in Windows Server 2012 R2, so you get it for free. So it's definitely something you want to use. MVGRE gateway, this is it. That's it operating. It's got its service role, the MVGRE gateway itself. And what's sort of unique is that if you're running System Center with Virtual Machine Manager and you decide to build a private cloud, you can actually utilize something called Windows Azure Pack. Folks have probably been hearing a lot more about Windows Azure Pack. Yes? Nod your head? Hearing more about it? This is really the direction of where things are going, so I think you need to start paying more attention to it. I think this is where Microsoft is going to be scaling up on the, both the private cloud side and also what the integration is going to be with Azure. Okay? It's very easy for tenants to use. The whole design is around giving them the same experience and user experience as Azure itself. And the MVGRE gateway really needs to be built before you start trying to lay down all these principal components of working with Windows Azure Pack. It makes your life easier. So private IPv6 cloud capabilities you actually have in the Windows Azure Pack. I'm showing the Windows Azure Pack as opposed to System Center screenshots right now. You actually have the choice of either IPv4 or IPv6. Let me repeat that. You have a choice of either IPv4 or IPv6. So why is this? Right? I've been advocating for years and years and years as someone who goes out and speaks about IPv6. You should run dual stack. What should I do? Run dual stack. My book's written all about it. What do? Run dual stack. Here I am pitching you private cloud. What am I telling you to do? I'm saying pick one. Is that the answer you want to hear? No. So what am I going to ask you to do? I'm going to ask you to send an email to Microsoft. And because I don't work for Microsoft, so I can say this. I don't work for Microsoft. Send them an email and say, hey, how come I don't have dual stack support in this configuration? That would help my cause. How's that? So in Microsoft Private Cloud, you can get, with Windows Azure Pack, you can obviously set up a V6 net on the virtual net, right? But unless you built it out in System Center, Virtual Machine Manager, you're going to have a rough time actually getting it to work, right? Because those underlying components don't know how it operates. So you really need to do both. So the capabilities, they're both there, V4, V6, this, as I mentioned before. You're going to get the Hyper-V network virtualization and MVGRE gateway is going to be provided with both NAT and gateway components for V4. In V6, you're not really going to get them, right? You're going to have to set up stuff within System Center and do some additional work in terms of getting the Azure Pack to really sort of recognize that and do the right thing. So, to-dos. I really think Fabric's got to be configured for network virtualization. You got to have the GRE components done for the NCAP to work. Templates for Windows Azure Pack. How many folks are actually working with any templates in Windows Azure Pack at all? Okay, so you're going to have to bust out the JSON editor and allow V6 to operate, okay, if you plan on turning on V6 services. Because most of the pre-built stuff that's out there, V4 only. And then you're going to need to use static address assignments unless you build out DHCP V6 services in advance for the IPv6 network that you lay down. You're not going to want to do that because reality is that System Center really can't keep track of the addresses that are going on in V6 space. You want to use a static address assignment. Just trust me on this one. They haven't fixed this. It's not going to get fixed anytime soon. So, considerations. Technically, Microsoft Private Cloud supports IPv6. I'll repeat that. Technically, Private Cloud supports IPv6. You can run it as the underlay network. You can run it as the overlay network. You just can't configure any dual stack. So for the customer address space, this is really important. You can't configure in your customer address space any dual stack at all. So how many folks that are running dual stack think this is a great solution to migrate to? You're going to see some challenges, right? So let's talk about how we're going to work around some of those here in a little bit. So here's your alternate screenshot. So there's the alternate for that. This is actually IPv4 with the IPv6 as an overlay. So we'll play around in the lab and see what we can do to change that up. There was a question about this earlier. So private cloud IPv6 address tracking. How many folks think it's going to be important to be able to track addresses? This is something that you have to deal with. I would say you want to assume that your router advertisements with default gateway and prefix learning is not necessarily going to work correctly across the board within private cloud deployments, because multicast doesn't work the way you think it does in MVGRE, and it certainly doesn't work at all in Azure. So if you have a multicast deployment in Azure, you're going to run into difficulties as you try to deploy and scale out. That's a distinct problem for V6, because V6 relies on multicast for a tremendous amount of stuff that it does. So my caveat is, if you're on box on same host, this will work because multicast works the way you expect. When you start stretching and moving on to different hosts, you might run into some challenges depending on how your network is built. If you're doing VLAN stitching versus doing MVGRE, so you're going to get slightly different behavior on that side. And you're going to have to sort of build a matrix and figure out what's going to work and what's not. The fabric's going to track IPv6 addresses for IPv hosts, assuming you do the static mode. So you're going to have that. And you can get all of this through the IPAM plugin. So if you do the IPAM plugin in System Center, you're going to get the tracking. It's going to be stateful in there, and you're going to get awareness. So what's it capable of? It technically supports IPv6. It's not enabled by default. And you really need to explicitly plan and design and do everything that you think you need to do in advance before you just lay it down. Just don't go in and think you're going to be adding V6 later as an add-on. You're going to have some challenges with that. And you're going to have a lot of limitation challenges with moving to Azure, because Azure doesn't support V6 at all. So trying to deploy V6 in Azure, I have some hacks. You can come talk to me afterwards. I've done some weird labs up in Azure to try and get V6 working. I crashed a few machines. But it's a challenge, to say the least. Private cloud resources, Aidan Finn, who just won Speaker Idol, has a great book talking about private cloud. Recommend you read it. So this is my actually big picture goal wish list. So this is what I want you guys to go advocate to Microsoft. Be able to run IPv6 and or dual stack in private, hybrid, or public cloud. That's where our target goal really should be. Have a default build of Hyper-V network virtualization through System Center that supports IPv6 or dual stack. This is what I would like to see happen. And have a loose coupling or affinity for dual stack in Hyper-V network virtualization for some forwarding and learning behavior. And if you're familiar with dual stack, you'll know what I'm talking about in terms of some of the automatic tunneling and other things that V6 does. You need to have some affinity between V4 and V6. Nothing exists between the two today. That's why it's V4 or V6. They're sort of ship in the night. They're not really paying attention to each other at all operationally. So impacts and limitations. Private cloud, IPv6 impacts. If you lay down V6 on the underlay, you're going to spend a lot more time troubleshooting, because you can potentially do either V4 or V6 for the MVGRE stuff. You could have it happening at the same time on both protocols. You probably don't want to try and debug that. You choose one or the other as the underlay, that provider address space. Unless you're already running native V6, I really suggest you utilize MVGRE to do IPv6 over IPv4. So you're probably running an IPv4 infrastructure today. Use the overlay as V6 to get those V6 services for where you need them. The rest of the time, run V4. It pains me to say that. And then you're going to have to bonify the VM role templates. I mentioned this earlier for Windows Azure Pack. Got to bust out and do your JSON editor in order to be able to get V6 added in. And then plan to support IPv6 when you start building out your cluster configuration. It really is sort of painful to add it later on. So you want to get that design aspect in done first. Limitations. You can't run both IPv4 and IPv6, which is that dual stack stuff, for customer address space. So if you're planning on providing a dual stack environment for your customers running private cloud or Windows Azure Pack, you're going to have some challenges. You can work around some of them, but you're going to have some challenges. You're going to need to run some sort of NAT64 DNS source. For those of you that are doing direct access, anyone doing direct access at all? So direct access, you're already dealing with a V6-only environment from those clients coming in and trying to connect to resources internally. You're probably already deploying a NAT64 DNS64 environment. You can utilize that exact same environment to solve this exact same sort of problem in your private cloud components that are running V4 only. And basically be able to gain access from those V6 client hosts to the V4 resources that are running your private cloud, or on the site-to-site PVM up to Azure. So if you haven't thought about that, think about putting in a NAT64, DNS64 device set to be able to go and reach into Azure for those V4-only resources that you're doing across your stretched site-to-site VPN for connectivity. Okay? You're going to have real limited routing and forwarding functions. Really sort of depends on your data center deployment of IPv6, but it's not going to be as robust as you would like from a routing protocol basis. So let's talk about integration, DHCP v6. I cover this in here. I really don't recommend you use DHCP v6 within the private cloud side, exactly because of the static address issues that I mentioned earlier. However, if you want, you can set it up. It can be utilized. You can set up DHCP v6 reservation sets within your customer address space too to help them out. If they need things of that nature, just realize you're going to spend a little bit of time debugging. There's the DHCP unique identifier, the DUID, and the interface associated identifier that are two pieces of information that you need for v6 in order to do a reservation. In DHCP v4, what do we use for reservations? Set up a reservation. MAC address. We use a MAC address. We don't use that at all in DHCP v6. So you're going to have to figure out in PowerShell how to scrub and get that information out of the host at time of generation. And additionally, you're going to have to move that around depending on what your workload moves are. You might have to change and rebuild new DHCP reservations based off of live migration, things of that nature. Lots of fun. So don't use the MAC. It doesn't have the same option code, so you need to be careful about that. You can read in my book about where to pick those up. A little bit of PowerShell. It's nothing really super exciting because the rest of it is on the rest. I have probably, I think, about another 7 slides of the PowerShell stuff you need to run through. IPAM. How many folks are actually using the IPAM plugin within System Center Virtual Machine Manager? Anyone? One hand? Just one person? Really suggest you just snap it in there and use it. How many folks are using something like Infoblox? Infoblox, BlueCat? Anyone using BlueCat? Anyone using QIP? I don't even know what the Cisco product is because no one buys it. So the reality is that you can absolutely use it. It's great for tracking and use it and being able to log information about what IPv addresses are actually outstanding without giving someone access to the System Center portal. So if you need someone who's just doing inventory tracking, best way to do it because it can go in and reach through IPAM to get reporting. So go ahead and do that. And with HMV, you can build a lot of networks. I think the single NVGRE gateway support for containers is well in excess of 100. That's per customer. You can build as many networks in there as you want. So realistically, this is a very scalable solution. You're going to need something to track addresses, folks, because as you're spinning up networks and they're building them dynamically, you really want to know what's allocated where. All right? This is the way to do that to understand and help troubleshoot problems potentially. So VPN. All major VPNs actually support IPv6 today in some sort of tunnel configuration. Site-to-site, client-to-site, you really don't have to worry about that. The issue becomes if you have an NVGRE gateway to act as an IPv6 forwarder for VPN, you could technically extend v6 across multiple data centers. The problem you run into is you're going to have to do some weird looping on your VPN because the NVGRE gateway can do routing function, but you're not going to have it do the VPN function in addition, so you're going to have to pass off to another device and have it route on your behalf across some sort of VPN gateway. Okay, because the NVGRE gateway is going to operate in route-only mode at that point in time. Okay, you also want to consider your MTU size. IPv6 is not allowed to go below 1280, and your path MTU actually has to work. This means you need ICMP v6 operational end-to-end for the VPN, otherwise your traffic won't work from host to host. Okay, IPv6 utilizes path MTU discovery in order to ensure that it can talk to the other host. Path MTU discovery is dependent on ICMP version 6. Therefore, if path MTU discovery isn't working, I can't talk to the other side. It's that simple. Won't work. So, really quickly, this is actually to give you an idea of sort of the layout of preferred use. And our eventual goal is we're all going to be doing native IPv6. Okay? Tunneling, dual stack, and translation are all temporary methods until we get to v6 native. Quick thing I want to mention, for those of you who are running 80s, Active Directory, domain configurations, 80 sites and services, sites and subnets, right? You actually need to go in and put your v6 information in here. It doesn't seem like something you would do automatically, but it is something that's important. If you're running a private cloud and you're running Active Directory resources within it, you want to make sure that you get them entered in and they have the same propagation behavior as your v4 resources. Otherwise, you're going to have behavior that you don't expect. So, some caveats. It's still enabled by default. It's still preferred, all right? These are the SKU Windows 7 Server 2008 R2 on up. You're going to have 6724, assuming they have all the updates. If not, you're on the older 3484 RFC, and you need to do that quick little fix up, right, that we did for the prefix policy table to fix everything up so that you get the right behavior. And there's that readiness article. NCSI. How many folks actually know what NCSI is? networking folks, NCSI, anyone, going once, going twice, not a single person. Network connection status indicator. How many folks notice when you connect to a wireless network, the little thing that pops up says you are connected to the internet? You're not connected to the internet? That is NCSI. NCSI is a detection component that reaches out and looks for a URL that Microsoft provides and says, can I connect to it? And it has a text file in there that says, guess what, you connected successfully. And that's how it actually detects whether you're behind a proxy or whether you're actually connected public to the public V4 internet. It does the same thing for V6, and actually that's how it uses NCSI to actually determine whether V6 or V4 is preferred when you have V6 available. I'll just bring you up to speed on this. So that's how it works. NCSI will override the RFC 6724 behavior. So if NCSI fails to work and doesn't detect V6, you will automatically fail back to V4. I want that to be really, really clear. NCSI will override 6724, and if you cannot detect that it can talk to, quote-unquote, a public V6 service, it will fail and fall back to V4. Okay, we're clear on that? So how many folks want to test V6 in the lab? Hopefully most of you, right? Want to test V6 in the lab? Quickly, just a bit of advice, do an NCSI hack, put an entry in there, make sure you have a web server that's available that can respond on V6 that has that quick little text file. You can just go up to the website on the URL, it's out of my book, grab the text file, you're all good to go. It'll stand up and initiate and allow you to use V6 and it'll keep it up. If you set up V6 in a lab and it can't do this, what does it do? It falls back to V4 and you have no operational V6 lab. It's a little bit of advice there. So Vista and Server 2008, they're still going to use 3484, so you need to do that hack. So what does Microsoft do? This is sort of an interesting question, right? Because they don't test their software in V4-only configurations anymore. So how in the world did we end up in this world where we have private cloud with V4-only or V6-only? Their argument is that today they can support either or, and that their eventual plan is to support dual stack. But if you have a V6 need requirement, you can instantiate and build a V6 GRE overlay and support the V6 resources that you need to do within that private cloud bubble, and then roll and deploy V4 resources that are V4 only in a separate private cloud that you need to do that. That's our argument. I don't agree with it, but that's what they're telling you from a solution offering set today. So reality is Microsoft standardized on dual stack support. That's how they test and build their product. So we get into this sort of interesting contradiction about calling support and saying, I need dual stack support, but if you run in private cloud, you may not have dual stack support. They will work with you to sort of troubleshoot a V4 only or a V6 only configuration. So just have that in mind. So what impact of disabling IPv6 might you have? So on the support case side, there's a lot of anecdotal, especially around Exchange, that, you know, the first thing they're going to ask you to do is turn V6 back on. This becomes a really big challenge when you're dealing with a private cloud and you're deploying Exchange in a private cloud in a V4-only configuration. So you really want to make sure that you test and validate your configuration for private cloud deployment, V4, before you release it out to the wild, right? Because you want to make sure that it's going to operate the way you think without that V6 resource. And you're a little bit on your own on that, right, to validate out and test it all out. So don't randomly turn it off in production. Some bad things can happen. If you've ever been there and you've had that late night call, it's not a lot of fun. So 8.1, how are we doing on time, folks? Not doing too bad. So 8.1, Windows Server 2012 R2, they continue to have quality IPv6 support, right? It's high quality IPv6. Microsoft has been way ahead of the game on the IPv6 curve. Been very proud of them in terms of doing that for the community. Someone who represents the V6 community, been very happy about that. They have improved the PowerShell commandlets in the last release. Huge number of networking PowerShell commandlets, never mind V4, V6 and V4 together. Just a huge improvement overall. And then additional support by including in that NCSI behavior, which is really to address RFC 6555. And it conforms to 6724, which is the current RFC about prefix policy table behavior. So you're consistent with all the other operating system platforms. So if you're running Linux on top of your private cloud, you're running BSD on top of your private cloud, you're running OS X with a hack on top of your private cloud, you're going to get the same behavior because they support the same RFC. So best practices. You really need to decide upfront if you're going to design for IPv6, right? It really needs to be decided in advance if you're going to really support it and deal with it. Don't expect any IPv6 support in hybrid or public cloud. How many folks think Azure is going to have IPv6 support in a year? 2 years? 3 years? No years? Question mark? I've been asking for a while now. The good news is that MSIT has been pressuring the Azure team, the Azure networking team, very hard to get IPv6 support pushed into Azure for their own need requirement. For Microsoft IT internal runs a tremendous amount of IPv6. They run dual stack everywhere pretty much. And they are extending their own services into Azure, and they're one of their top service requests into the Azure networking team is for IPv6 support in Azure. So trust me, they're actively working on this stuff. My recommendation is actually put a NAT64, DNS64 to get around some of the issues of v6 to v4 resource requirements, okay, when you have a v6 resource. Yeah, I think it's evil too, but I'm giving you a solution. It may be an evil solution, but I'm giving you a solution to be able to get around it. It may not be the solution you want to hear, and it's a temporary one until they get the support done, but in the meantime, this is what you have to use. So, and it will be at least a year before public cloud really has anything going. So where are we now? Big picture goal, this is sort of the reality. You're going to be able to run IPv6 and/or dual stack in private, hybrid, or public. Sort of a broken story, right? We've got private that we can do some things in. Maybe some hybrid that we can do some things in as overlays. Public, you're really not going to see this. There's some other cloud providers who are providing some v6 service offerings, but not Azure today. The default build for Hyper-V network virtualization doesn't have any support for building this out on v6 natively or on dual stack natively. You have to go through extra effort to actually make that happen. And then there's no loose coupling or affinity for that dual stack behavior that I mentioned earlier. So these are the things that I'd like to see added in. So where are we at right now? Really, support IPv6 since Windows Server 2012 R2 is completely there. You don't have to worry about that. And in fact, within the private cloud, technically, IPv6 support, pure IPv6 support's there. Support in IPv6 in sort of public cloud, I'd say we get a big old zero on that one. And then, so I say out of the big picture, we're about a quarter of the way there overall. And so I really think we're here. This is what we're waiting on, right? Outside of the dual stack fix for private cloud. So here's a quick summary for you in terms of being able to pull stuff up. So sort of final thoughts. They really invested in making IPv6 a first-class citizen, but it's still not their default configuration for things like System Center and building out these components. And you really need to design a plan in advance, right, to support IPv6. And if you plan on doing dual stack, you're going to need to plan, and plan again based off of what's changing in the landscape. That's not the news I wanted to tell you, but unfortunately, it's just reality. And this is sort of my last thoughts. Because of the addressable allocation runout, you know, v6 really is the future. Future's now. You need to start adopting and building plans. I'm not saying you have to deploy today, but you really need to understand what you're going to do and how you're going to get there. That's what's going to be important. Questions? Any questions? I got questions for you folks. You have questions for me?
I got one. You mentioned that you really ought to not disable IPv6 on folks.
Right.
Can you explain any kind of behavior that causes by doing that, or is it just an anomalous kind of thing?
Yeah, you're gonna get some interesting behavior if you turn it off simply because there are some things that the Windows hosts do in terms of identifying themselves adjacent. This is actually the Exchange one. They use something called link local multicast name resolution, which is a multicast way of actually discovering names, adjoining names within the same subnet. And a lot of times if they have any dependency on that and they've used that to do neighbor discovery to find each other and it's not available in V4, you're gonna have some problems or you structurally turned it off because it has a binding to that resource. The moment you turn it off, it's no longer able to pass traffic that way. Things like clustering, if you set up clustering with all the default configurations, it actually uses that heartbeat link as defaults out to a v6 setting. So if you turn off v6, your heartbeat breaks. It does the right thing because it starts blasting on all your other interfaces and says, are you still alive? Yes, I am, and sort of helps you along that, but you're gonna fill up your log file with my heartbeat link doesn't work because it was built on v6. So those are the sort of things. And turning v6 off normally is a global config. It's not a per interface config, right? So that's why you don't necessarily want to turn it off. There are things I recommend in my book about turning off behavior-wise for transition technologies. You should turn the transition technologies off. You should not turn IPv6 off, but you should turn all the transition technologies off. 6-to-4, Isotap, Teredo, all should be off. So if you're doing it in the private cloud, use the static address range resources that are coming out of System Center to assign that host.
Okay, if
you don't have System Center and you have Hyper-V, I would set up the DHCP v6 server and use DHCP v6 the way you're supposed to with an RA. You can always manually or statically assign an address to the device. You have your choice. You can do all of it in PowerShell. Okay. Depends on what your best practices are today. If your best practice is to go in with v4 and statically assign an address, you can do that in v6. It's not fun, but you can do it in v6. Question?
So we've had issues with when a router fails over, we have a switch between routers. The link local address will change, and then the default gateway won't work anymore. And so we've had to put in the actual address of the gateway. That's not recommended, is it?
So you can still certainly put the address of the default gateway in there, and you can run a higher available protocol upstream versus the RA advertisements. What's happened to you is a timeout in the RA advertisement times, so you're not getting the update from the new RA because it still thinks the old one is active.
Yeah.
You handle this with high available default gateway configurations, right? So you use HSRP, VRP, or something else to go ahead and advertise down, puts in a spoof, that's the one that gets populated in your default gateway link local. Then when you flip, it doesn't matter, and it can forward through.
So yeah. I just need to look into that on my router.
Yes, you need to look into that on the router side. Question.
Can you explain a little bit why you'd recommend dual stack versus tunneling or translation?
Why do I recommend dual stack versus tunneling and translation? So the biggest reason that I recommend dual stack is you have a easier failback methodology from v6 to v4. So v6 is the preferred behavior. It's going to utilize v6, v4, v4. The problem with the tunneling protocol is 6-to-4. 6-to-4 is reliant on the fact that you have some sort of external router, right, that is going to process the 192.88.99.1 address for you. That is anycast all over the internet. So you're going to get asymmetrical routing behavior where potentially your first hop to get to there to get entrance into the v6 net from that 192.88.99.1 address may exist in Italy, and your operating data center operates in Ohio. And then when it comes back through and jumps off the v6 network and comes back to you all the way across the pond, maybe its close exit point was Japan. So you went from Italy to Japan to come all the way back in to Iowa or Idaho or wherever the heck you are. Doesn't matter. So you get asymmetrical routing behavior, not desirable. You want to control your routing behavior and your presence on the internet. 6-to-4 does not help you in that cause. Isotap. Let's talk about Isotap. Isotap has no agent on the local client operating system. You deploy an Isotap configuration. Your poor help desk tries to figure out what the heck is going on. Looks like I have V6 connectivity, but my Isotap router went down. You have no agent to tell you that the Isotap router went down. You have no way to detect that it went down. Your poor help desk person has no idea why. They're doing name resolution, it looks like it works fine, but I can't get to my V6 resource on my direct access box or whatever else. All because you have an Isotap service as an overlay that has no state information to pass up. So that's what's going on there. Teredo I don't have as much problems with, but it's not really designed as a corporate enterprise solution, but it works great for Xbox One. So carrier-grade NAT is a huge problem, and if you're an Xbox One person, there's a great presentation from Chris Palmer that was presented at the IPv6 World Congress or NANOG or ITF, I can't remember which. And Chris Palmer gave an excellent presentation about why they use Teredo to circumvent some of the carrier-grade NAT-related issues that go on that the service providers are putting in place. It doesn't allow you to have the first-person shooter experience with the guy who's living two houses down the street from you because you're behind the same public IP address that the service provider has enabled. So you can't talk to each other. So how do you get around that? You tunnel out to a V6 resource, and now you can talk to each other. So it's a better end-user experience in the gaming environment. It's actually faster than native V4, too, through doing multiple NAT translations. It's faster. So does that answer the question? Because that's all three transition mechanisms that exist.
So once we get this whole dual-stack thing working in the private cloud,
In the future, yeah.
And we have clients on our, you know, private clouds with statically assigned IPv6 addresses. How do we deal with those clients moving around? Because, I mean, and having short, I guess, short paths to where they're going. Because kind of the whole idea, I think, with IPv6 is your address is kind of a little, it's tied to your location a little bit, right?
So there's two, we can, let's talk offline because that's a pretty complicated discussion. There's mobile IPv6, there's LISP, there's a bunch of different ways, and then there's the state, what you're really talking about is the state table information that's kept in the MVGRE gateway. And how do I know what's best path forwarding for that MVGRE gateway tunnel for that host? That's the job of that MVGRE, basically SDN controller, it's that's what its job, its function is to instantiate and tell those Hyper-V hosts which one is the optimal tunnel to send that traffic across and who owns the default layer 3 gateway. That's what its job and role is. Question over here.
So we run a lot of link servers and we've turned off IPv6 on the NIC interface and the server 2012 NIC team. If we want to turn it back on or should we turn it back on, are there any risks?
So there are some risks about turning on IPv6. I would definitely test in the lab first. I recommend that if it's already operating and you didn't explicitly turn it off, just don't turn it off, right? But if you've already turned it off explicitly, you need to test to make sure. The biggest thing you're going to find probably is that any application services that are bound to the address, you have to reinitiate that process. So if you're trying to run a lifetime service that has already done that process, you're not going to get it to do that again unless you restart the service, right?
So do I hear you say that the best practice is to have dual stack turned on for Exchange?
Yeah, dual stack for Exchange is probably the best practice. Link does have some caveats around V6 that you need to be aware of. I mean, they just recently got support simply because the SIP service, SIP didn't support V6 for a long time. So there's some structural things in Link that you have to work around.
Right, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. Go ahead.
Oh, you're asking me to philosophize on that, huh? So here's my opinion. I'm not a fan of ULA. What you're talking about is what's called unique local addressing, ULA. ULA address space is designed to functionally allow a corporate entity to have some address space that they can utilize. It's not publicly routable on the internet. So it's similar in some fashion in that extent to RFC 1918, which is 10.192.172. Address spaces that you guys are used to using for sort of private. But ULA, you could still NAT, but its design function is really for private secure NATs. So anyone who's working for the NSA, anyone who's working for the government, anyone who's working for the power supply companies, please use ULA space because I don't want my home power thing hacked. Don't stick that on the internet, please. Even if you stick a firewall in front of it. Just use ULA address space. It takes care of it because it gets dropped to the floor at the internet edge. It's not supposed to be supported to run that way. You can still tunnel ULA across the public V6 internet if you wanted to. In terms of what you do, yeah, you run global unicast address space everywhere across your network. You just use routing as routing, and you use firewalls where you're supposed to, stateful firewalls, and you choose what routing prefixes you actually want to advertise. So if you have a section of your address space that you do not want to get public internet access at all, simply don't advertise it in your routing table past your internet edge. It's that simple. It'll never get advertised out. You can black hole it as it comes back in because you know it. And you have such a large address space that it's very easy to do this. You should have more than enough address blocks to allocate out. And just so everyone's clear, a /64, new notation, /64 is your standard subnet that you would assign to a regular VLAN. Don't assign anything bigger, don't assign anything small. You don't need bigger, by the way. The /64 means 2 to the 64th. Take the internet, every device on the internet, square it, and stick it on a subnet. Let's repeat that. Take the internet, square it, and stick it on a subnet. It's the world's largest gaming party like ever, all right? So you got enough address space to utilize there. Use your global unicast address space. Aaron is happy to give you, if you're in North America, Aaron's happy to give you as much address space as you functionally need. Think about networks, don't think about hosts. How many networks do I need to operate? Not how many hosts do I have? Doesn't matter, you got 2 to the 64th addresses to sign out. You don't have a problem with hosts anymore, okay? Oh, and just quickly to address it, everyone on point-to-point links, you're used to doing like /30s, right? Got to save address space in V4. Slash 30s, right? Maybe slash 31s if you're really, really, really squeezing out how many addresses you can get. Just assign a slash 64 to a point-to-point link. And it says, oh my God, how can you assign the internet squared to two links and we're only using two addresses out of the internet squared, right? Yeah, what's the largest amount of hosts you run in a single subnet ever? How many folks have run 8,000 hosts in a single subnet? Anyone done that? 10,000? 2,000. Anyone run 2,000? 2,000 hosts. 2 to the 64th minus 2,000. 2 to the 64th minus 2. Is there a difference? It's a rounding error that's so many zeros out, it is insignificant. So if I'm going to assign something to a point-to-point link, even if it was 2,000 devices in a link, it doesn't matter anymore. So just let that go. Jettison it out of your head. Don't worry about the addressing space allocation anymore. Okay? Let it go. It's tough. Do it. So a couple quick things, last but not least, and I'll get off. The stage is, I have some cards here that actually have discount codes for my book on the back. So it's just the ebook with a discount code on the back. So feel free to come up and grab it. It also has my sort of social media contact information if you want to reach out to me. Thank you so much for coming and attending and staying this late, because I know I'm probably running up against the end here. But and I understand we've got the party tonight, right? So try and track me down if you want to chat some more. I'll stay around here. Thanks so much.